Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Entertainment for free, mate. That's right.
Free entertainment. That's what it's all about. Hey, thanks a lot for being out there. Hopefully you're getting through your day. I said this yesterday, but I'll say it again. It's a totally beautiful day. So walk out onto your front porch to make time to go on a walk today. This is a beautiful Southern California day. Even though we are all sheltered in place, put on your face mask and go for a walk.
So you're putting your mask on if you even go for a walk.
Yes, even if I go for a walk. I am not messing around. You know, John, one of my favorite television personalities, I'm not going to call him a news guy, but one of my favorite television personalities is Chris Cuomo. And
he's a news guy, but has been
through hell with this COVID thing. I just think he's a great performer. That's what I think about Chris Cuomo. He's a great performer. Politics aside, there are certain people on television who are just great performers. Like, for example, Sean Hannity, great performer. I mean, he's no matter how you feel about his politics, he is a great performer. David Muir, we were talking about yesterday, great performer. There are certain people I've always thought Rush Limbaugh, great performer, one of the best. If you've ever, and again, politics aside, just as a radio personality, a spectacular performer. But Chris has been going through this every single night. He shows up with a fever. He's ranting and raving about how meaningless his job is. I mean, he's going through it. The last thing I want is to catch this thing right now. So, yes, I am wearing my mask when I go outside.
So today I took Reagan the dog to the pet store. Because we were out of poop bags, you know, those little poop bags you need. And then I wanted to get her some bones. So I walked her there, but I didn't put the mask on until I went in the store because I didn't see any people when I was walking. I just, you know, basically it was Reagan and I, and nobody came within 20 feet of me. And so I just waited and put the mask on when I went in the store. And when I got out of the store, I took it back off.
Yeah, you're probably okay. I'm probably being overly cautious. I mean, the last thing I want at this point is to get this sucker.
Yeah, true. You know what I've determined?
What's that?
Your outlook, your attitude about this whole coronavirus thing simply boils down to who do you listen to?
Right, sure.
Okay, now, because if whatever opinion you want to believe, it's out there. There are people like Mike Gundy who say we're going to, and Dabo Swinney who say we're going to have college football with packed stadiums on September 1st.
They're like Bill Plaschke who's canceled sports until 2023.
Right, but the guys you probably should listen to are the medical experts,
yes,
the guys like Dr. Anthony Fauci. And Anthony Fauci gave us some hope since you and I were last together.
Yes, he did.
He says there is a way for us to get sports back. Here is Dr. Fauci last night.
There's a way of doing that. Nobody comes to the stadium. Put them in big hotels, you know, wherever you want to play. Keep them very well surveilled, and namely a surveillance, but have them tested like every week and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family, and just let them play the season out. I mean, people say, well, you know, you can't play without spectators. Well, I think you probably get enough buy-in from people who are dying to see a baseball game, particularly me. I'm living in Washington. We have the world champion Washington Nationals. You know, I want to see them play again.
So, two things out of that. First of all, Anthony Fauci, cool guy, baseball fan. He's a sports fan. He wants to see this back as much as we do. And second, he does see a route by which players can be tested once a week and actually go through with playing games.
All right, so all you naysayers out there, all you Plaschke followers who say, Ireland, quit talking about games. We're not having games. There's no sports. No sports until 2022.
Or Wilmot talking about, hey, I don't want to hear your plans. Your plans are stupid.
Your plans are all stupid. I'm tired of your plans. There it is from the source, from Dr. Anthony Fauci, that it's not stupid. That it is possible that we might have baseball this year. But let's give you the flip side.
Yes.
The mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, and it's not technically, Mace, different from what Fauci said. It's just not as optimistic. Here's yes. Mayor Garcetti a few hours ago.
Big concerts in L.A. or Major League Baseball or NFL football or basketball, none of that's going to happen until 2021 from your perspective in L.A.?
It would be very difficult to see that. If there's something that happens, of course, and public health officials say green light, but I think people have to think about it this way. It's not a mayor bringing bad news about these things. These have been immensely difficult decisions to make psychologically, but I've always been very clear of mind.
So there's Garcetti, who, by the way, let's give credit to Garcetti. He's been great during this thing, and my opinion of him, which wasn't all, I didn't always have the greatest opinion of Eric Garcetti.
Oh, I like him. I've always liked him.
I mean, I always thought he was fine, but I always thought he was a little bit like, I thought he was a little bit of a lightweight, to be honest with you. But he's come through this, and has done a really good job. He's taking.
Yeah, I always thought his predecessor, Antonio Villaraigosa, was kind of an empty suit.
Yeah, he was a lightweight.
I've never thought that about Garcetti.
I always thought Garcetti was a lightweight too, but he's come through this like a champ. And so is Gavin Newsom. But you know, that's his point of view. The thing about Garcetti is he's a politician. He's not a scientist. Fauci is a scientist.
Right, and Mace, again, I want to be clear here. What Fauci is saying could and should happen, and what Garcetti is saying is likely to happen, aren't necessarily opposite viewpoints. What we never, you and I never thought that we were necessarily going to be able to attend as fans a game in the new Rams Stadium or a game at Dodger Stadium or a game at Staples Center. We were hoping, and we're kind of still hoping, but we, you know, we've been consistent, at least you and I have, that we'll take sports any way we can get
Absolutely.
Them. What Fauci is saying is that you would have to quarantine all these people in that bubble environment.
Right.
And I've never heard anyone suggest that was going to be in California. I've heard Arizona for baseball. I've heard Las Vegas for basketball. I haven't heard anything for football. But what, you know, what Fauci was suggesting is perhaps you could do this like bowl games, like send these teams to maybe seven or eight sites.
Right.
And you know, play on different days. We're going to have to adjust. I mean, like I heard the other day say, you know, what? How in the world are they going to play the Masters in November, you know, which is what they're proposing to play it in October or November? Well, what if you played it Tuesday through Friday?
Well, they're playing a tournament on June the 11th, reportedly.
Right. But no, you know, here's what I'm saying. Like, people are saying you can't have Masters Sunday up against the NFL.
See what you're saying.
You don't have to put it up against the NFL. Round one Tuesday, round two Wednesday, round three Thursday, round four Friday.
Right.
And then college football Saturday and pro football Sunday.
And
we're
by
gonna
the way,
we're going to have to be open to doing things we've never done before.
Morales just pointed out to me that Garcetti has control of Dodger Stadium because that's in Los Angeles. He has no control over Inglewood. He's got no control over the new Rams Stadium because that's a completely different government in terms of the NFL. The local government there, I think, is still that Mayor James Butts, who's in charge there. So Garcetti's in charge of Dodger Stadium, but he's not in charge of what's going on in Inglewood. I still think it's highly unlikely that we see fans in stadiums, in arenas, in ballparks this year.
But
that doesn't
okay.
mean we won't get games.
Yeah, and really, I can't stress this enough. The way sports make money, for the most part, is through TV revenue.
Yes.
Through advertising. Sports are an entertainment vehicle, and TV networks and regional sports networks pay insane amounts of money to be able to televise those games and bring them into your house. Now, there are some people, Mason is one of these people, that really love live sports and will attend several live sporting events a year. But the overwhelming majority of fans, especially Laker fans in Los Angeles, never set foot in the building.
Right.
And so if we were able to get sports back, even if it was in a biodome in Las Vegas under some crazy lab experiment, for lack of a better term, that's good. We'll take it. You know, then we at least get some sports to watch.
Right. And you know, people have been saying, and I think this is just faulty thinking. That why are we talking about sports? It's something trivial when you compare it to the greater problems.
Disagree. Now,
and here's the thing. Sports is going to be a gigantic way that is going to lead us out of this and give us some sense of normalcy. Sports has always been a great unifier in our culture. And sure, there are some people that don't follow sports, but there are an awful lot more that do. And it is reassuring to know that the Dodgers won 3-1 last night. Or it's reassuring to know that the Lakers won 121-110 over a bad Brooklyn Nets team. It's reassuring to know the Lakers are up 2-1 in a series. It's the way we tell time. It gives us a sense of progress. Sports is going to be a gigantic way that leads us out of this and leads us into a state of normalcy. So don't say sports is trivial. It is really, really important.
Okay, and to drive your point home, today is Jackie Robinson Day.
Yes.
Right? If we were playing baseball, every player would be wearing number 42. And I strongly advise you to go get the movie 42 if you've never seen it. All of us are looking for things to watch. Matter of fact, I may even watch it tonight. I haven't seen it in a few years.
I don't know if it's on iTunes or Netflix. Let's check.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But there's ways. I mean, what I've found is any movie you can get. You might have to pay a couple bucks for it. The other day when I wanted to watch Richard Jewell, I rented it for $4.99 because I wanted to watch it before we talked to John Hamm.
Right.
But Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball. I can't tell you how many times, and this goes back to the point you were making, that sports has shown us the way in things. Has shown us, you know, there's the famous story about how John McKay and Bear Bryant were friends.
Sure.
Football coaches. And so Bear Bryant was talking to John McKay one day, and he said, "Man, I have got to get the people in my state to allow me to bring black players into Alabama." He said,
yep.
he goes, it's going to happen, but it's going to happen slower in the South than it is where you are in Southern California. And they came up with the idea. McKay said, "Well, why don't I bring my team that has a lot of black players down to Alabama and we'll play football and everybody will see that it's no big deal."
Right.
And that was the Sam Cunningham game, where Sam Cunningham, who's been on our show many times,
yep,
well, went down and played really, really well. And it allowed Bear Bryant to go to his boosters and say, "Guys, we have Sam Cunninghams all throughout the South that,
yep,
we could recruit and bring here." And it changed football. And this, going back to your thing, once the color barrier got broken in sports, first by Jackie in baseball, and then eventually in all the other sports, it became no big deal to hire black men and women to work side by side in the factories and to move into the neighborhoods. And it basically, sports can be the great awakener. It can normalize things. If I guarantee you, Mace, if they figure out a way to play games, the next thing you're going to see is people getting back on the subways and people getting back into restaurants and people doing things. We're going to see the return. It's not going to be overnight, but we're going to see the return of gathering. First, it'll be with 3 or 4 people. Then it'll be with 10. And then when the medical people give us the green light, we can gather in groups again. But sports is going to be the one that opens the door for that. So, and especially Mason and I, don't call us and stop tweeting us that sports doesn't matter. And why are you guys talking about, well, people are dying? Sports does matter. And of course we know people are dying. But we're going to get back to life eventually. It's just a matter of when. And sports is going to help lead us there. And I know we got a break, but when we come back, Mace, Vin Scully, we've got 2 Jackie Robinson stories,
yeah,
that Funch has pulled that Vin Scully told. And plus, who's gonna turn the radio off when we run 4 or 5 minutes of Vin Scully?
Vin Scully, exactly.
We'll do that next in honor of Jackie Robinson Day. And Vin can tell stories about Jackie. And then you guys can see how sports is not just a game. It can lead the way when you got to get out of stuff like this.
It's an incredible force of change. So we'll hear from Vin Scully coming up next for you. Also today, we are going to hear from Joe Varden, who wrote a piece for The Athletic. He went around because The Last Dance premieres on Sunday night on ESPN, 6 o'clock Pacific. There'll be two episodes of it, 2 hours of it, so it'll be from 6 until 8. He went around and talked to a bunch of people about the first time they met Michael Jordan and what it was like. We'll talk to Joe about that, and then Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes is going to join us a little bit later on.
Oh, and we have a great senior shout out today. Maybe one of our best ones.
Really, really cool. Yeah. So all that's coming up for you. You can reach us, by the way, on the phones, 877-710-ESPN. You can reach us on voicemail. We've been getting a ton of really great voicemails. The number of our voicemail line is 530-ESPN-710, 530-ESPN-710. And you can also hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland. Bunch of different ways to reach us so that you can participate in the show. Mason and Ireland, it is a positive, absolutely enthusiastic Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for being out there. 710 ESPN. Yeah, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland. A lot of positivity, a lot of enthusiasm today. We are all getting through this. Through it together. Thank you very much to everybody that's working on the front lines of this thing, whether you are a doctor or you are a nurse or you are a driver or you are in any essential service. If you work in a grocery store, our grocery store workers are facing it and in it every single day. We appreciate you. We love what you're doing. And thank you very much for allowing us to shelter in place and bend this friggin' curve.
Mace, did you watch any of the Kirk Gibson home run game last night on ESPN when you got off
work? I watched the very, very end. I saw
that's the best
day.
Part. You got the best part.
I was there for the good part, yeah.
So very fun to watch. And, of course, Vin Scully called that game back in 1988. And Vin called Jackie Robinson's games back in the day. Vin knew Jackie. And when they unveiled the statue a year or two ago, Vin told a couple of Jackie stories. Since today is Jackie Robinson Day, if they were playing games, everybody would be wearing 42. We thought it would be appropriate to hear Vin tell a couple of Jackie Robinson stories. Hit it, Funch.
Hi, everybody, and a very pleasant Saturday to you. Couldn't resist that. There is a picture that they just showed a moment ago, and it shows Jackie Robinson and Vin Scully poised to race on ice skates. And it was the end of my first year, and the Dodgers had asked me to go to Grossinger's, a well-known resort hotel in the Catskill Mountains in New York. And being a kid, having grown up with the snow and the ice in New York, I had a great pair of skates. I was a pretty good skater. Jackie and Rachel arrived at almost the same time. And Jackie looked at me and he said, oh, you're going to go skating? I said, yeah. He said, I'll go with you. I said, great. And then Rachel said, well, I'll go too. Rachel was 7 months pregnant. We tried to talk her out of it. But just like Jackie, her mind was set. She was going to go ice skating. So Jackie and I go into the dressing room. We're putting on the skates, my big long racer blades, really hot dog stuff back then. And as we're lacing things up, Jack said, when we get out there, I'll race you. I said, wow, Jack. I said, you're from Southern California. I know you're a great athlete, but I didn't know you ice skated. And he said, I've never been on skates in my life. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, I'm not a great skater, but I can certainly beat someone who's never been on skates in his life. And Jackie got very serious and said, yes, but that's how I'll learn. The competitive spirit would drive him to learn. Meanwhile, talking about competitive spirit, my heart was in my mouth, not because of Jackie, but I look out on the ice, and here she comes, Rachel, 7 or 8 months pregnant, and the whole place is terrified except her. She is absolutely having a wonderful time. And unless my chronology is wrong, that small baby in her tummy at the time was Sharon. who was born in 1950. Now I have one other story. I've told this story before, but come to think of it, I've told every story before. But I'd like to hear it again, if you don't mind. Jackie Robinson. It was back about 1950, maybe 51, not more than that. And Jackie, who had received other threatening letters, apparently received one that was deadly serious and impressed the authorities. We were in Cincinnati for a weekend series to play at Crosley Field. The letter intimated the deed would be done on Sunday. Sunday morning, when the team was in the bus going to the dressing room, it was pretty quiet. And in the dressing room, it was very quiet. This was the most serious pregame atmosphere probably in the game. Everyone was worried. And it was very quiet. And the Dodgers had a young left fielder by the name of Gene Hermansky. And Gene was colorful, bright, blonde, white, and fully you know what. And with this quiet atmosphere in the clubhouse, Gene suddenly said, "I've got it." And everybody looked and they said, "What?" He said, "We'll all wear number 42 and they'll never know which one is Jackie Robinson." Now that seemed funny at the day. In 1997, Jackie's number was retired. And in 2004, Gene Hermansky's words from 1950 came to fruition. "We'll all wear number 42. So tonight, when the Dodgers in Arizona line up on the foul lines, they'll be wearing 42. And all across the country, in every major league ballpark, every player will be wearing 42. And what does the 42 mean? It doesn't mean that they're all equal, not in the respect. Some are taller than others. Some are heavier than others. Some are left-handed. Some are right-handed. But the one thing they share in carrying number 42 is the fact that the man who wore it gave them the one thing that no one at the time could ever have done. He gave them equality. And he gave them opportunity. Those were the two things that many of those people never had to hold of their hearts when they first began to play. So yes, 42 is a great number. It means a lot for a great man. But it is a tremendous number when you think of the man who wore it with such dignity, with such pride, and with such great discipline. And wasn't it sweet that he had Rachel on his arm? Love you, Rachel. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. By the way, we've had Rachel Robinson on the air before. Mace, it was years ago. It was when we were doing it at the old Fox Sports West studio.
And the word I would use to describe her was she had such grace.
Presence.
She had such grace. I mean, she had an aura about her because of her experience. And you can imagine, you know, if you see the movie 42, which is on Netflix, I just found out.
No, I just looked. I don't think it's on Netflix, but it is on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And you can rent it for $4 for $3.99. I actually have the DVD. Look through your DVD collection. A lot of people have it. And there's some great extras on there, but if you want to watch it Amazon Prime, you can rent it for $3.99.
And there's that one scene where he is playing the Philadelphia Phillies. And who is that manager? That ass manager who is managing the Phillies.
And it was played by the actor that was in Dodgeball that did a complete turn. I'll look it up. But it was that guy just kept yelling the N-word.
Ben
over
Chapman.
And over. Yeah.
Ben Chapman was the guy.
It Alan Tudyk? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, Alan Tudyk was playing him, who's generally a good guy. Was playing him and was just a nasty, nasty guy. And you think about the presence of mind, the humility that you had to play with, and the willingness to accept all of that hatred and not to turn it around. I mean, that's the one thing that that Branch Rickey knew about Jackie Robinson was that he was going to be able to handle this. There were great players in the Negro Leagues, and there were great players who would be ready to step in. But there had to be a trailblazer, there had to be a first, and it had to be a special person who could deal with the amount of hatred that would be spewed at him. Jackie Robinson was that guy. By the way, you know who the first guy in the American League was?
I want to say Larry Doby.
It was Larry Doby. He was the first guy in the American League who I think played for the Indians, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get credit, but he went through the exact same experience. You know, it's interesting about Jackie Robinson. He was not a man without controversy. In the 1960 election, Jackie was a Republican. And in the 1960 election, he endorsed Nixon over JFK. And he was a lifelong Republican, which seemed
to be... Yeah, well, keep
in
mind, though, too, that Richard Nixon was from Southern California. He was from Yorba Linda. Jackie Robinson was from Pasadena. So chances are they probably had met before Nixon ever ran for president.
Right, but Jackie was a lifelong Republican,
even
after he was done. Like, spoke at the National Republican Convention. I mean, and so he was not without his controversy. He worked across the grain a lot and did it with a great deal of grace. I played not long ago an interview. You can find an interview with Jackie Robinson and Dick Cavett on YouTube. In fact, I'll tweet out the link to it. It's Jackie in, like, maybe 1972 or 73. When did Jackie pass away?
72, I think.
This is maybe the last interview he ever did. And Dick Cavett was a great interviewer and spent a lot of time with Jackie. And it's a really good sort of snapshot of not just his playing career, but also what he did with the rest of his life.
He died in October of 72.
Yeah, and this interview was done in 1971.
By the way, Rachel is still alive.
She's 97. Yeah.
All right. So coming up, Joe Varden will join us. Joe probably has a lot of baseball stories. That's been his main sport. But he also is seen The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan story. So we'll get into that with Joe coming up.
Yep. That's next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland show. It is Wednesday, and we are getting through a good week this week. We're getting through a good week. There are signs, and obviously there's terrible stuff still going on in the world, but there are signs that the curve is bending, is flattening, and that we are making progress, particularly in California. Our governor, Gavin Newsom, along with the governors of Oregon and Washington are coming up with a plan to slowly pull out of this in the most responsible way possible and make sure that we stay healthy and make sure that we keep this thing contained while also resuming life to whatever degree that we can right now. Whatever this new normal is going to be, we are going to get there. We're going to get there.
All right, and Joe Varden's going to join us. He's the longtime NBA guy from Cleveland. He covered LeBron for most of his time with the Cavs, and he's spoken to a lot of people about Michael Jordan and the Last Dance documentary, which is coming up on Sunday. And now we've got him, and Joe Varden, who now writes for The Athletic, joins us now. Joe, thank you for doing this, man. How are you holding up?
I'm hanging in there. I hope you guys are as well.
Are you sheltered in place there?
I mean, for the most part, I go for a nice long hour-long run here on Lake Erie, and I think about L.A. and how it's like 50 degrees warmer than it is here. You know, it's all
good. Yeah. So, you know, Joe, before we get into your story that's up now, your Michael Jordan story, I listened to a podcast that you were on last year. And I found it interesting. You're convinced, or at least you were at the time, and I'll ask if you still are, that LeBron is very happy in L.A., and regardless of his contract status, that he's going to finish his career here. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I really do. And I also think if you have seen their rhetoric over the last well, almost a year now. They've backed way off of the Bronny Jr. stuff. Privately, they still think he'll be a pro. They think he's going to grow, and he's going to grow into that body, and his skill set will translate for being 6'5 or whatever he ends up being. But yes, I think he is extremely happy in L.A. I think the family is thrilled to be in L.A. At this point in his life, LeBron has no interest in playing in a different city from where they are, and the kids love the school. Savannah loves living there. It's definitely where they want to be.
So let's get to your piece, which is a really cool story with The Last Dance coming up on Sunday night. And we are all, you know, we're tired of Tiger King. We're done with that phase of our lives, and we're going to go into the Last Dance phase of our lives during this quarantine. You went around and interviewed a whole bunch of players who we'll see in The Last Dance about their very first meetings with Michael Jordan. Which one of those surprised you the most?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I just have to tell you guys, I mean, my favorite one is the Dwayne Wade story, which is the one we led with. And yep. I mean, but I want, because he lives out by you guys now, and I just, if he's listening, I want him to hear this because I appreciated it so much. I ran into his phone number a while back, and I don't use it often, but for something like this, like I did text him a couple times to see if he wanted to participate, and then on the very last, my very last go at him, I didn't hear anything all day, and then he left me a voice text at 1 a.m. with that whole story, the whole thing about how it was his draft night and how he was having a big party in Chicago. And all of a sudden his cousin tells him that Michael Jordan is outside and he can't get in. And he had to go sprint out there and find out that it was true that the bouncer would not let Michael Jordan into the party because Michael wouldn't pay. Michael rode in on his motorcycle, which I think was a Harley. And he's standing there on his bike, and Dwayne is meeting this guy for the first time. It's his idol. And Michael's like, I just wanted to come and show you some love. And then he rides off into the night in his motorcycle. And Dwayne took the time to leave all of this on my voicemail. And I just thought that was really cool on his part.
That is cool.
It's a great piece, Joe, because you talk to so many different people of walks of life. There's obviously a lot of basketball players in there, but there's some sports writers in there. There's this trainer in there. Who was the man? Maybe you just answered it with Wade, but who were the harder people to pin down for this? Was there anybody that you had to make multiple swipes at, or was everybody pretty excited to tell this story once you told them what they were working on?
You know, it's interesting, and that's a great question. Tim Grover, his trainer, was very willing and happy to do it, but it took some work to line that up. I didn't know about David Falk. I mean, I've been in the league for a while now. I think this is my sixth year, but I haven't really crossed paths with him, and so I wasn't sure. He was very helpful. The Scottie Pippen, I mean, there's no way. Like, I got him the the absolute last possible second I could have, because it was that night in San Francisco where the Warriors played, but Steph was sick, and we didn't know if he had the coronavirus. And that was the last Saturday night game of the year, as it turned out. And he was there for the pregame, and I happened to grab him just on the court before he went on TV. And so I would probably say Scotty, just, and not that his answer was great. It was good, and I appreciate it, but he didn't blow your doors off like Dwayne or like Dominique Wilkins did. But to do a story like this, you need Scottie Pippen in it. And that was pretty much the last, as it turned out, the last chance we had. I thought we were going to run this after the finals. Like, that's how much time I thought we had. And then
sure,
the virus hit, and then, of course, ESPN was going to move up the documentary. We knew they would, and, of course, they should. And so then that kind of put us on alert to try to get this out.
It's impossible to underestimate the impact that this last dance, it's sort of like your piece. You race to get it out. Because you thought it was going to come out after the finals. Last Dance was originally going to come out in June, I think right after the finals, and they accelerated that a great deal. As did anybody have a negative or an abrasive experience in their first meeting of Michael Jordan?
Well, that's a great question, too. And, I mean, I think, I don't know, well, abrasive isn't exactly right. I mean, you know, Gary Payton went at him in a preseason game. They had never met before. And then all of a sudden, they play each other very first week of the year, I think. And Michael's like, I've got him all night. And he just ran roughshod over him. You've got Chauncey Billups, who's standing at the foul line in his first ever meeting with Michael, was the first game of his career. And Chauncey's standing there, and he and Ron Mercer are both staring at Michael. And then they look away, and then they look back, and they hear Michael like, hey, young fella, quit looking at me. But there was just, we kind of write in the piece, it's like, all these people met Michael at different points in his life. And it's like, if you met him when he's the owner of the Hornets, having accomplished everything that he's accomplished, like Terry Rozier did last summer, that's a super huge deal. If you're Dwayne Wade, draft party, huge deal. But if you're Sam Smith in 1984 and you're interviewing this rookie, and yeah, he was already big with Team USA and he did his stuff with North Carolina, but he's not the Michael Jordan yet. Or if you're Mark Price and you're playing with him in the Pan Am games, or Chris Mullin at the McDonald's All-American game, like he's just this other dude. You know, Doc Rivers was there, was at some high school showcase with him. And at the time, everybody was talking about Buzz Peterson, who turned out to be Michael Jordan's roommate at North Carolina. And Doc remembers all those years ago, it's like 1982 probably, and he left that showcase not thinking about Buzz, thinking about Michael. So it's just, it depends on where in life you met him.
We're talking to Joe Vardon, who has a great story right now out on The Athletic, where he asked numerous people their stories of when they met Michael Jordan and how they met him. It's really fun to read, and we encourage you to go to The Athletic and read it. Joe, we only got you for a few more minutes here, so I want to ask you, we were kicking this around yesterday on the show. Were you covering the Cavs in Cleveland when they won the title in 2016?
Yes.
Okay, so if they don't win that Game 7 in Oakland, if it goes the other way, and the Warriors win that game, so in essence the Warriors would have won their second consecutive title. We were talking about how kind of a sliding doors conversation, how things would have been different. Do you think if the Warriors win that LeBron ever would have left Cleveland? Do the Lakers ever get LeBron if he didn't win that title, or had he not won it, would he stayed in Ohio until he did?
You know, I need to get my bearings here for a minute because I need to think about contract situations. And so he was up in 16, and of course, because they won, of course he was going to re-sign, and he actually gave them the longest deal that he, I think, had given Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
I think that's right. And so, you know, at the same time, winning as it did, like, told him, like, it felt like it kind of had freed him. It freed him from his responsibility here. Now, we did a piece, a year and a half ago, I think, at this point, where he says that the trade of Kyrie Irving was the beginning of the end in Cleveland. And he also mentioned that the general manager at the time being let go, David Griffin, was another huge thing. So I guess if we want to take his word for it, that if they had never let David Griffin go, and then Griff either made a better trade for Kyrie or Kyrie had stayed, maybe, and all that stuff happened after the championship, but the truth of the matter is that when they won here in Cleveland in 16, and the euphoria and just sort of him fulfilling his promise, and it, you know, nobody could have imagined it, he absolutely kind of felt free then to do what he wanted to do, and he had always had his eye on LA. That's absolutely true.
How surprised are you, having followed LeBron through his career, how surprised are you that age 35 season, 17 years in the league, he is still playing at what appears to be his peak level?
So when he signed with the Lakers, I was on, I mean, who knows how many programs, including yours, telling you guys that you can never count this dude out. That what he did in 2018, he played all 104 games here in 2018. He dragged this team to the finals. They should have won game one. Like he was an MVP for sure. And so I was telling you guys, don't count him out ever. And then last year happened. And the way that all went down, like my confidence was shaken to the point where I was concerned coming into this year. And then I did not like the way he played on opening night against Kawhi. And I was really concerned. But what I've seen since has been great. And we cannot discount the impact of having Anthony Davis playing alongside him. At the point that Anthony is in his career, he's probably the best player to ever play with LeBron. And the complementary player that Anthony is for LeBron's game at this point in his career is fantastic. He is absolutely helping LeBron in a way that no other teammate has. I think the LeBron-Kyrie duo was lethal. Just lethal. You know, I mean, Kevin Durant kind of messed that whole thing up by going to the Warriors. But when you talk about LeBron and Anthony Davis and all that Anthony Davis brings to the table at the young age of 27 or 8 or whatever he is, it's the perfect time for LeBron to kind of be able to extend his dominance the way that he has. I mean, he's Anthony Davis helps him in ways that no other player has.
Joe, the piece is great. We encourage everybody to go check it out in The Athletic. And thank you very much for making time for us. Most of all, stay safe.
Yeah, you too. And thanks for having me, because I love to come on and talk about it. So thanks for having me, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, really cool piece. I'll tweet out a link to it. It's on The Athletic, so it's a subscriber thing. And by the way, you know, I know it's a tough time and everybody's cash short, but the Athletic is well worth your time. When they started that, I wasn't sure if The Athletic was going to make it, John. I just didn't think people would necessarily pay for content. But they created such a stable of great writers, really some of the very best writers that cover sports. And it has become completely worth subscribing to. And they created a new model, and good for them as a way to create content.
Matter of fact, there's a fun piece that Andy Kamenetsky did today that's on there where he went down the Chick Hearn YouTube rabbit hole and found all the movies and TV shows where Chick did bit parts. So if you're a Chick Hearn fan, go catch Andy's story on The Athletic. It's really good.
That's awesome.
All right, coming up, we'll play some of the voicemails that you guys have been leaving. We'll also try and get some of your phone calls in here. 877-710-ESPN. And at the top of the hour, at 4 o'clock, we've got a really, really good senior shout-out. Maybe probably one of our best ones yet.
Really cool. That's all coming up for you, Mason and Ireland, 710-ESPN. 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland. It is an optimistic Wednesday. It is all positivity. It is all enthusiasm. We thank you for being out there, and we are grateful that you're out there for us and vice versa. We need you guys to get through all this.
Yeah,
I don't know what I would do without the show.
Let's get some of your phone calls. Here's Hector in Hacienda Heights. Hey, Hector, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi. How you doing, Hector?
I'm doing well and glad to see that you guys are well and staying safe and your families are well. Hey, we can never get enough of these Vince Scully stories. I always appreciate it.
And amen.
I also appreciate the fact that you guys are not forgetting about Jackie Robinson Day. But I just want to shed some light. I appreciate you guys, like I said, you know, bringing up this important day. But as a Latino, and I mean, he's been big in my upbringing. I was born in 72. I learned about Jackie into the late 80s. As a matter of fact, it was my second year in high school. I was a junior, and that's when Gibson hit the homer. But I just started learning so much about him. And right, the story that you correlated with Jackie Robinson and John McKay and the Alabama coach, I just think it's a little stretch that you try to talk about the impact that it made in a societal sense, in a political sense, and an economic sense.
How so?
In terms of sports, right, these white owners, these white coaches, and these the white audience say, hey, these right, this black body, right, this commodity can help us win. That didn't transfer into society. There's no way we're going to have it move in with us, right? There's no way, right, they're going to be CEOs along with us. There's no way they're going to be head coaches. But, hey, if they can play and help us win, by all means. But in terms of a genuine, authentic, and transformational change in terms of society, like I said, we still haven't got there. But, again,
but Hector, let me ask you this. Did you think you said you were born in 72, right?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So you're 9 years younger than I am. Did you ever think growing up you'd live to see the day we had a black president?
Honestly, no. That's progress, right? That's progress in terms of a title. But I'm talking about like effective and transformational, seeing it all along. Like I said,
I think it happens every day.
Progress.
Yeah, I completely agree with him. There is so much progress to be made. I mean, if you look at the way the COVID-19 is transmitting. It is disproportionately affecting people of color, and that's because people of color don't have the economic resources in a lot of cases to have their own private doctors. They have pre-existing conditions because of food deserts. I mean, there's a great inequality. One of the great lies that is being told right now is that this virus is affecting everybody the same way. It's not. It's disproportionately affecting neighborhoods with people of color.
All right, Hector, thanks for calling, man.
I just want to finish up in a positive note. Like I said, I really appreciate you guys. I've listened to you guys for years and years and years, and you guys are great at this. But just when it comes to race issues, I wish you guys would like invite other people who are a little bit more informed. But anyways, like I said, it's a positive Wednesday, and let's move forward.
Positive right, Wednesday. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Here's Charlie from Malibu. Hey, Charlie, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hi. I really love your show, by the way. It's just
fabulous. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie.
And you had something on about 2 weeks ago. You were talking about Jim Healey, who 90% of the audience has no idea who he was.
Oh, right. He was great. Great.
I had an idea. Why couldn't you bring Patrick Healey in for an hour and play some of the clips, like what's Kingman performance and Bavakwa, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat?
Yep. It's a great idea.
And play those stories, but do it for an hour, because I think people will be blown away how clever he was.
Where would we find old Jim Healey?
Patrick's got him. Patrick's got him too.
Does
Patrick?
He?
Patrick has kept all of them. Yeah, Patrick's a reporter at Channel 4. I've met him. And I'm going to follow up on this idea, Charlie. When we get back in the studio, which hopefully will be in 2020, when we get back into the studio, we'll invite Patrick in and see if he'll do it. But if he'll do it, we'll do it. We love Jim Healey and love that show, and it would be really fun.
Do you think people will just be blown away when they see, you know, they love him a little Tommy Lasorda? In my opinion, on Kingman's performance.
It was great.
It was fantastic. It's fantastic. Yeah, and I mean, he was a truly unique performer. He was a great radio performer.
And that show was like a vaudeville act,
It was nothing like it. It was a benchmark. If you were a sports fan, you listened to that every single day. That was a habit that so many people had. And I think introducing that to a new generation of people is a really cool idea.
Yeah, Charlie, thank you. Stay safe, man.
Thanks,
That's
Charlie.
A great idea. That'd be fun to do. And I think Patrick would do it. We'll reach out to him after the virus is over and see if we can make it happen.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, coming up next, we have a senior shout-out that it's a senior graduating from high school, and her dad wrote us a letter, and it's one of the coolest letters we've ever received. We'll tell you about it next.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.